here at the Old City Swans.
Welcome back to A Bevy of Bloods, a fan podcast of the Sydney Swans Football Club.
So to all you loyal Swans out there, just can't get enough of the red and the white.
Fluff up your tail feathers and settle in for a potentially biased yarn about all things to do with our beloved Bloods.
G'day there, Cygnets and Swanlings. Welcome back to A Bevy of Bloods. You're joined, as always, by the boys from Sydney. I'm Chris and this is Noddy.
That's right, you lucky loyal Swans fans. In this review episode, we're going to be chatting about the win against the Suns. And remember, if you like what you hear, give us a bloody follow. All right, let's kick things off with a quick game recap.
Right, last Sunday afternoon in front of 35,000 Swans fans and about 17 Suns fans at the SCG, our Sydney Swans defeated the Gold Coast Suns by 53 points with a final score of 17-8-110 to 8-9-57. Noddy, it was a beautiful day in Sydney and it just was a perfect time and really well done memorial to what happened in Bondi Westfields, the knifing tragedy, of course, with a few lives lost. No doubt everyone in the Swans fans were all affected in some way or another. But mate, Albo was in attendance. It was a really beautiful moment. What can we take away from that? About what a great way to start a game, I guess.
Yeah, I think it was obviously it was a big event in Sydney in the week leading up, and I think Horse is on record saying, you know, this is our community, and a lot of the team and the club live over that side in the eastern suburbs. So, you know, a lot of them, that is like their normal, the place where they go shopping and stuff. So it was very, very close to home, and there were people affected who were linked to people in the club as well. So it was a very big event for the club and for Sydney, and I think it was a touching start to the game. Of course, it was also Red Kite Day, which is the charity for kids and families suffering with cancer. And there's a 24-year-long relationship that the Swans have with that foundation. And Cunners is the ambassador. I think previously it had been Kirky and I'm forgetting who the other guys are. But real clubmen have taken that mantle over the journey, and Cunners has got it now. And it was a really good event, wasn't it? Like how good are those pictures when they're announcing the squad on the big screen?
Oh, I love it. I keep cracking up every time I see Lizards or Brody Grundy's ones. It just goes to show, like, I guess having a club, and we've mentioned it before on the potty, that having a club that plays football is not just what the club does, right? There's a whole lot more to it. There's a whole community aspect around the club. And of course, as the bevy, that's kind of what we're trying to emphasize. But it was just really touching moment around Red Kite Day on a Sunday afternoon with everyone, with a really big crowd in attendance, all there to watch some good football and just get around each other. A special, special moment. And the football was fantastic. And
I mean, the sun came out as the Suns came out. We only lost one quarter and we never trailed at any point. So before that, mate, just quick shout out to one of the Swans' biggest, newest fans, Ivy. Our good mate Harps brought his eldest daughter along for the first time for her very first AFL game, and she was a cracker, wasn't she?
She had so much energy. So the real, all of our friends in that group in the O'Reilly rabble, O'Reilly 3, if you ever are close by and you want to see us, you probably would have heard us by now if you've been around there. But there's a lot of the fellas, including Noddy, of course, have a few kids, and they're all trying to time out when they should start bringing their kids to the footy. It's a tough gig, mate. Like, you know about it. You're starting to consider what you're going to do there. Yeah. Your little plugger is hitting what? He's three or so now?
Yeah, coming up to three. So not quite there. I've still got my beer license.
Yeah, but Ivy, I tell you what, she is prime for football. And Harps had her down to say exactly what she had to say. And in the halftime interview we had with her, she was on fire. She knew. She was all primed, and she was more media trained than anyone else I'd seen in most parts of football.
She's probably Isaac Heaney's biggest fan already.
Yeah, she very much is, yeah.
It was awesome. She was just like, which team do you hate the most? No, which team do you like the least? So it was quite positive. Yeah. One of these questions, that, one of the many questions that Ivy put forth. And we're only so happy to. I mean, look, my bro Nugget was away, couldn't make it, and he's normally the noisemaker. But I'll tell you what, we found a very capable replacement in young Ivy because she
baby
was
Nugget.
Just. Oh, baby Nugget, super energy, just ready to scream. Like, welcome to the Bloods, Ivy. This is your second family.
That's it. So we look forward to Ivy riding the wave up and down with the emotions as we do as Swans fans for her whole life. So Ivy is hook, line and sinker.
Big time. And talking about emotions, so brilliant first quarter, right?
Yeah.
I think it was in my view, I don't know about numbers or anything, but just pure eye test, I reckon that was our best first quarter of the year.
Most rounded for sure. Yeah.
Just rounded. Obviously, we could have, you can always take more chances, right, and get further ahead, but it just was just beautiful footy, high pressure, Grundy, Adams, Heaney, all these guys just killing it. And then second quarter, flip the script, we lose the pressure and I start to feel like, you know, the Suns are gonna run away from, gonna take this momentum, and luckily they didn't kick, and then we came out and righted the wrongs, and we increased our pressure and scored like 73% of our entries in the third, and that was pretty much it, and went on for a pretty solid win in the end, mate. I mean, how did you see it, mate? Like, I know that was a bit of a summary, but did you see it a similar way?
Yeah, I mean, just the dryness of everything that happened in the second. Like, the second just seemed so obscure. We really just didn't really know what to say. Even the crowd was dead quiet. Really, the crowd was so lucid at that point. I've never seen us like that bad before. It was a genuine library.
Mate, but we then, kicked 1 point for the quarter, mate.
I know. I think we won one clearance for the quarter along the way. It's like there was nothing going on there. It was, and I will point it towards this moment. Papley's mark.
Oh yeah,
running into that corner took this absolute screamer mark. The kind of mark that when you're playing, super slips, classic catches in the backyard with the tennis ball. It was that kind of mark, and then to go back and kick it.
Hard kick.
I haven't heard the crowd go that loud since prelim. That's how crazy that was.
That really fired us up again, didn't it? And I'll tell you one.
Yeah.
Errol Goulden, with those three lace outs in particular. I mean, he had a lot of other good kicks, but three inside 50s lace out to marks and three set shots. I mean, I think he was the. Yeah, he owned that stat for the game.
He'd ready the ship along the way, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And look, I mean, that's saying something. Like, he probably wasn't the standout player today at the game. We're recording a couple of days later. But let's talk about Brody Grundy. I've got a new working nickname, Grunzilla. I've got a bit of a Japanese vibe here. He's just wreaking havoc against the opposition rucks, and he's like, Grunzilla. I reckon he'd really be into it. I think he'd probably dress up as Godzilla, and then we'd tag AFL Japan. It'd be this whole Instagram thing. I think he'd...
One thing the folks at home don't know is that Noddy actually speaks fluent Japanese. So Noddy, if you don't mind, can you say tall man kicks the ball far? I don't know, like.
背の高い男の子がボールを取って長く蹴るんです。
Or something like that. I'd probably have to Google Translate, make sure I got it right. But something like that. The point is, the more like a samurai you sound, the more badass you feel.
It comes from the throat.
It does. And that's why
it comes from there.
Brody Grundy. Anyway, so he's not Japanese at all. I just thought his name might look funny in like a Godzilla type
mock-up. The samurai style haircut.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's what it was. Subconsciously.
Yeah, the man bun. Maybe there's something in this. 200th Samurai Grundy.
Yep, 200th game, first goal for the club, absolute ripper of a game. How good was he?
Best game that he's ever played for us, and he's been consistent since he started. Every single game, he's been polling in the Bob Medal, our equivalent of the Bob Skilton, of course. Bob Medal every single week. He will do so again this week. He's been fantastic, and this game was clearly his best. His work around the ball, his second efforts, his tackles, 11 tackles for the game. He was doing so much. He was winning our tackle count in the first quarter. Just making things happen. It was the best game I have seen from a ruckman on our side for some time.
Most tackles for us,
I know we had Jesus.
Yep.
Sorry?
Most tackles for us, wasn't he?
I think he was up there. Did he end up getting it up, or did Rowie end up climbing back up to his regular podium?
It's always the way, isn't it? Rowie's like, you're not going to beat me.
No, you're right. He ended up winning, getting the most tackles over Rowie. So no doubt it's going to be an awkward conversation in that locker room at some point.
Raoul. We'll talk about Raoul and Rowie later.
Talk about Raoul in time.
The tackle kings.
Yeah, so Grundy, incredible, mate. Well, I mean, what?
24 disposals, 15 contested possessions. Obviously, kicked it behind early on, but then kicked that that goal, that first goal of his in the fourth. Just amazing. Just real big reason that we were able to come out and turn things in our favor again in the second half. It was and like fantasy, you got like 150 or something. It was awesome. Like, I don't know if anyone's.
Did you have him in your team? Just
out
of interest?
Yeah, mate.
Okay, good boy. Very good boy. Yeah, you're not coming 35,000 for nothing.
Whatever, yeah, that's right. Whatever. After my first round, 35th, I've certainly dropped back a bit. But, mate, look, other than that, Heaney was hot again. Yes. Oh, my God. He's opened up the coaches' votes, hasn't he? He's 20 on merit. The guy just looks as good as he's ever looked, but fitter, effortless. Effortless. That's a great word. Great word. And talking about Grundy and Heaney, they combined well, didn't they, throughout? I mean, Heaney's field kicking. I guess one thing we've always been wanting him to break out, right? But he has had stints in the midfield before. And previously, I guess some of his field kicking, you'd think, oh, okay, maybe it's not quite there. I mean, years later, then we see the likes of Gordon and Blakey come out and they're just precision, right? Campbell and Roberts, I think, can go in that section too. But I don't know, like his kicking is really good. Don't you reckon? Like his field kicking, his accuracy, picking out players.
It's just he's doing every part of the game perfectly. He's playing the contested ball really well. He's good in the air. He's kicking goals, so he's getting in the minds of most people. Like, he's just doing everything that a perfect player would do, and he just so happens to be doing it while also looking effortless and getting around the ground really easy. Like one of the bevy, Matt mentioned, like, is it just me or does it seem like he's just gliding across the ground?
And
maybe all those injuries that he's been carrying the last couple of years have kind of subsided and he's actually getting himself around the ground with ease. And this is what we're seeing out of it. And an opportunity to play out of the midfield. And maybe it's just a whole lot of stars just align themselves with, you know, injuries and whatnot, and him having to be the man to just pick it up. And as we know, he's tough as nails. He's got the skill sets to boot. And yeah, we're seeing all of that happen this year. What a season. He's on his way to being the best player of the game, and he's well in ahead.
Definite favorite. I mean, it just gets harder and harder to think about putting him anywhere other than where he's played for the first of the season. Like, it's just,
I think after the first two games, there was still the commentary on like, okay, so what happens when Parker and Mills start coming back? But now we're six games in, and it's no brainer. You just keep him where he is, right?
I mean, I'd be pretty. You'd be reticent, like you'd be like, okay, let's not tinker with like, you know, one of the best starts to a season in modern times.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it will be interesting. Obviously, there's matchups and weather and you know all that other stuff to take into consideration. But yeah, I don't know.
Speaking
mate.
Of matchups,
oh yeah,
Rowie on Raoul.
The battle of the rows.
The battle of the Raoul's. Rows.
Raoul, yeah. Row rows. Yeah. Rowie, eight tackles.
Talk to me.
Yep, Rowie, eight tackles. Raoul, 12, as we said a second ago. Grundjira. Brody Grundy got 11 tackles. So these were the top three tacklers on the day. But these two guys, even from last year, they were pretty competitive, weren't they, in the tackle count. Rowie is sitting pretty well in first on 55 tackles. Raoul's in third on 46. So I kind of like what's developing here between the two of them. Just hard at it, tacklers. Obviously, Raoul's contested possession work is better than Raoul. But, I mean, he was a first draft, previous first draft pick. So he's got all the accolades and all the expectation. But Rowie's just worked hard and is our supreme, you know, role player.
Yeah.
But I kind of like what's going on here with these guys, you know, the tackle kings.
to your point, last year Rao came first in tackles with 190 and Rowbottom with 176 in second place.
There you go.
So to have these two at each other for an entire day, that deserves a Foxtel spotlight in itself to just watch the battle going on, because that would have been superb viewing. Just two hard nuts who don't ever take things personally but go super hard at everything all the time, going to tackle the hurt. It would have been superb.
So the other thing we spoke about, one of the videos, is obviously the Suns have got a stack of talent. Noah Anderson was taken at pick two in the same year with Rao, the story about them being best mates, playing high school footy together and then being picked up by the Suns. And Anderson from last year probably had breakout last year, but he's carried on really good form. I think he's averaging like 30 touches this year. And James Jordan, JJ, doing a bit of a defensive midfield role on him and keeps him pretty quiet. I mean, he broke out and got a goal at the end of the game. But, you know, I think, you know, when you're keeping a player as influential as Anderson as quiet as he did for three quarters, massive tick. And also, JJ's pocket. Thank you, Polly. I like that.
Polly naming the pocket just in front of the O'Reilly stand as JJ's pocket, heading, Paddington end.
Yeah,
second goal from there, from the exact same spot, basically. So yeah. maybe there's something eventuating here. He's a gun. I think all of our mids, on a general sense, we also talk about some of those halfbacks. Let's talk about Lizard, for instance.
The pressure for first, third, and fourth especially was there, and that was driven by Grundy and some of those other inside mids. Taylor Adams in the first quarter, for sure.
Very good, yeah.
And as my mate Cyrus, who's a massive Pies fan, the first thing he said was, a couple of ex-Collingwood players getting you the win. So I thought, you cheeky bastard. But I guess not too wrong. I think he's done pretty well with Darcy Cameron there, ex-Swan. But anyway, I think when you structure up so well, it gives your back line all the help. It needs all the help you can get. With that kind of pressure, McCartan and Milliken are already combining really well. Obviously, Rampy out. Rampy would be the one calling the shots, you think, structurally. We sort of thought that maybe McCartan is taking on that role. I know Lloyd and Cunners were there as the senior statesman, but it seemed like McCartan was doing more of a job on Ben King, which kept him goalless for first half. But Milliken then is the one to prosper there and taking some good intercept marks and feeding off there. But I mean, it's good. It's looking good.
It's a whole backline alignment was really, really good. I think that was one of the more balanced parts of our entire game, as you mentioned. And to your point, we talked about Blakey and we immediately started talking about the entire backline, because without the backline doing their job and solidifying and nullifying those plays, Blakey can't get loose. And he got loose many times this game because he could, because you had the guys or the other forwards were all locked up. Blakey got himself loose for a little bit and then went on a run on a tear because you've just got opened up the ground and quickly. And that's the danger of him. So, I could not agree more. I think Milliken and McCartan in particular played fantastic lockdown roles in their own space.
Yeah, and then as you say, let Blakey off the leash, and then you know Ollie Florent had a blinder, probably his best game in ages. Juzzy McInerney, with all that, we don't know if it was Juzzy and Wixie, but well, let's just say that it was. And Wixie's got two goals.
There's so many rumors going on.
God, it's like playing Home and Away or something, isn't it, mate? Literally, it's like.
Yeah. Well, let's just talk about that quickly because it's good to see Wixie back. That immediately made a massive difference in the pressure in those forward line. And to see him get a goal early, I think that first quarter, straight off the bat, to ease it all off, let's put this behind us and let's just get on with footy.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's what we need. You know, we had been missing a bit of that forward 50 pressure. I think they ended up getting equal forward 50 tackles in the game, 14 all, but at one point I think it was first and third quarter we had seven to their like none or something like that. Like it was very clear that we applied a lot of pressure in the first and the third quarter. And third quarter was obviously the one where we were really accurate, where we scored, as I was saying, like over 70% of the time we went in. A lot of set shots. Like we were so accurate, which is great. I guess you're just not going to be able to do that every week. But in terms of goal scorers, right, okay, Joel Amati. Amati Party, four
the party
across the whole game. That's pretty good.
beautiful, beautifully consistent and doing things that probably we've wanted from him from a little bit, clunking some marks over a head, putting a bit of pressure on his own man to allow Logan to get a mark and a goal in that second quarter, I think.
Even, or have a shot at goal anyway. Run down tackle himself.
Run down tackle, well. Yep. I like trying to break through packs and stuff. So like these are the things that I think like that the his general game has needed. But at the same time, as he's progressing and building himself up, also kicking four goals along the way. I mean, it's good to see. And as more game time he's getting, he's got a lot of trust from a lot of very clever people in that football club. And we kind of need to sit back and start appreciating that because it's, you know, it's coming to fruition. You know, let's see how the rest of the season goes because he is obviously favored. We're going with those tours for now, but the pressure, that's what I was trying to get to.
Yep.
There's a lot of words. He, yeah, I mean, that, I feel that that kind of really helped us seemed like a more well-structured forward line anyway.
I was just going to say, again, like mix of goal kickers, right? So Amadi 4, Papley 3, you touched on the mark and the goal highlight. Logan, Wilbur, Wicks, as I said, awesome return, two goals each, and then one from Grundy, Warner, Heaney, and JJ's pocket. And then there are a couple of behinds here and there, but that's another good spread of goal scorers. So it's going through the top 100 goal kickers in the comp, and only GWS and Sydney have 8 players in that top 100. We all spoke about Collingwood's ability last year to spread their avenues to goal, and they had like 14 or so in that top 100, which is like a phenomenal output. But at the moment, yes, Giants and Swans are at the top with 8 players. Collingwood, Port and Western Bulldogs have 7 each, and then from there it just drops. So we've started really well. We're spreading the load. Obviously, Logan's kicked the most at the moment, I think 13.
Logan with 13. Yep.
13, and then Party's coming up behind them, like 11-ish, I think. And then I think it's like Papley, Heaney, Wilbur, and drops off like that, I think, like maybe Wicks after that. But it's good. It's good to have avenues to goal, right, and multiple goal scorers. So that was impressive.
And to see all the forwards in that high piece as well, it means they're all doing their job. They're all getting the opportunity to score. Yep. I think a fair bit last year we also noticed a lot of the midfielders were getting our goals. That's the streaming from the midfield. That's fantastic. That's good to see. That's an option that we need to be working on. We need to apply.
Oh, Chad Warner's in the mix as well. I think he's kicked
Chad Warner, of course.
Yeah,
and but to see the forwards, the deep forwards like Amadi and Logan taking up the majority of those goals. And
McLean's in there as well. McLean's in there as well.
Yeah. That's what you want to see. That's what you want to see. That's what we're there for. That's what we're making sure that they're doing the job that they need to do.
Well, that's what we spoke about at the end of last year when we're like, what do we want to see next year? Obviously, we're like looking forward to a world without Buddy, and we have these three tools largely untested on their own. And, you know, we're saying, you know, what's a pass mark? And, you know, we're hoping, you know, for the high draft pick Logan showing a lot of potential, although younger, 2-3-4 years younger than these other boys, Amadi and Party and Dossa. You know, hoping to kick 30 to 40 or, you know, 20 to 30 sort of range. And they're all on track for that. So obviously don't want to speak too soon, but it's going well so far. And I think, I mean, you feel like it's this drive out of the midfield, and a big, big part of that is Grundy, I think.
Yep. Quality inserts from the midfield into that forward line, allowing them to have a shot at it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. In terms of some of those other guys, Matthew Roberts, Robbo.
Now, mate, you mentioned at the game, and I just posted something earlier today, and you looked over to me, you're like, you know, he's only played 12 games.
It's crazy.
And I've just gone, what?
Yeah, right?
Like, are you kidding me?
He plays like a 150 gamer.
Yeah,
like he's 100%. He's just so calm, looks around for chip kicks, gets it to the ball users. He uses it well anyway.
Yeah.
So obviously with our senior players out still, Rampy, Parks and Mills, Lloyd was our most experienced, and you know, he's on 230 odd games, and then Cunner's on about 190 or so. Obviously there's Grundy and Adams there, and then behind that Heaney and Paps and so the Ollie and Haywood as well. But But with those two, I guess, small defenders, although I think Polly said that she saw Jake Lloyd in a centre bounce at one point. So he had a bit of a widespread role. But like with these guys sort of, I guess, calling the shot structure-wise, it seems very obvious that the team is happy for the ball to be in Robbo's hands going out to make that first decision about who's it going to.
Yeah, you got to. I mean, if you're trusting a 12 gamer up until this weekend, if you're trusting a, let's say from the beginning of this season, you're trusting a 6 gamer to sit into that back line and just learn off some of the best that we've had, and also be progressing in himself so quickly to the point where we totally forget that he's only played like just over a couple hands of games. Like, it's just insane. And he's, as you mentioned, he's got all the skill sets, all solid. Does he become that general? Does he become the McVeigh in that back line? Are we watching this happen in front of us?
I think so. I think this is all the hallmarks of a breakout year. Obviously, you interviewed Millsy in the preseason, said who's had the standout preseason. He straight away said Robbo. And then for him to back it up, you know, he's had some very, very solid games. He's had some tidy fantasy scores as well, mate. You feel like, of course, he's still young. He's going to make mistakes, but with every game, he's just getting more and more confident. And he's already got the Rising Star nomination earlier this year, right? So he's getting some of that reward, I think, for his effort, or recognition rather. I don't know. Obviously, like with, as I was saying, like Lloyd and Cunners probably coming to the end of their career. I think they're Cunningham's out of contract this year and Lloyd's end of next year. So, you know, you can sort of see the writing on the wall with the transition. And then probably Campbell comes into play there. As we said, Ollie Florence established. We're going to see what he's doing with his contract. But I don't know, mate. It's good. It's a good news story, and we haven't even spoken about the fantastic Mr. Fox, Mr. Fix-It.
Going back into the back line this back week, into the back line. As he's been playing into that forward line. Although I did see him kind of go up a little bit further up higher, but maybe just dragging someone up or being dragged up rather as well. But yeah, I mean, Foxy just doing a bit of both, isn't he? That back line is just a bit more settled with him back there. I mean, we're obviously missing an enormous name in Rampy and just what he does to the structure of the game. And just to have Foxy back there, I think that made a huge difference.
I think he's Rampy's replacement, right? He can play tall and small, and Horse has said that. I think he's a little bit like Heaney, to be honest, Fox. He can sort of do... He can play every line, right? So
he can run any. He can run all day. He can play contested. He can get a mark.
Yeah,
his kicking a goal has been not as quite as sharp as we would like it, but that's what you're going to get from a backman.
But his pressure tackling really was there while Wicks was, you know, coming in as sub and before this game, obviously. But with Wicks coming in and Rampy out, you got the luxury of pushing him down back and playing tall and small. So I don't know. It was good. It was a good. All of this means. You know, obviously, while the second quarter was a bit of a scare, in the end, it was a very pleasing effort. I mean, the key stat for me, where is it here? We scored 64 points from turnovers in the forward half, and we scored 15 goals, 4 from set shots. And that's from taking, we take 16 inside 50 marks. So, just precision ball use, really clean by hand and super accurate, but backed up by that pressure in first, third and fourth, and obviously...
And a midfield team just riling through it. Just churning through it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, mate, we're getting on in time. Bob Medal, we always try to say about the Bob Medal, of course, our 3-2-1 points.
Yeah.
It's no surprise, Grundy for 3, Heaney for 2, and we're going to give the 1 to the Lizard. We've spoken about all 3 of those players. Not a whole lot more to say about them other than they were incredible. Now, where are we in the season? We've just gone past our first bye. Where do we sit in the season? Where do we sit in the ladder now?
So we're coming in second, which is awesome. Yeah. 5 wins, 1 loss. GWS and Carlton are also 5-1, but we've got a higher percentage. And we 3 sit behind Geelong, who are coming first. They're the only team still 6-0.
Annoyingly.
I didn't go through to have a look at who they've played. I'm sure there's a bit of, you know, you could read into it, but, you know, we played Richmond, who knocked us off, and then everyone's expecting us to kill the Eagles, and now they've gone on to surprise
win a game.
The Harley Reid show. So it's still early days. Everyone's still sort of, you know, sorting each other out. But the point is, you know, we've started really, really well. And if we can carry on from here, you've got the next, how many games you got there? 5 or 6 games before the bye?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games before the bye. Yep. So we got ourselves Hawks in 17th place away for this week. We got ourselves GWS, who's coming third, had first place locked up until the weekend at home. We've got Frio 9th away over there in WA, Carlton coming 4th at home, and then the Dogs coming in on 8th away. We're just trying to find form before our next bye. So if we look at this, we've got ourselves 3 of the teams in the top 8. Frio arguably was surprised by the Weagles, so I'd actually put them a bit higher up than they should be. And so we're looking at a relatively quite competitive, or at least end-to-end set of games ahead of us. We've got a couple in the mid-tier, we've got one down the bottom of the ladder, and we've got ones that are going to be in the pointy end, expect to be in the pointy end with GWS and Carlton. So what are we looking at for the next 5 games, Noddy? Like, what do we expect to see out of this? If we're looking at 3-2, are we happy with the way the season's gone? What are we looking at?
Well, I don't know. I think this might be a harder run than the first chunk of the seasons. I mean, GWS, Carlton and the Dogs, who are, well, even Freo. Look, I don't know. I'm looking at this feeling quite nervous, just the team. Yeah. I don't think Hawks will be easy at the MCG, although they have been probably a bit more of a rabble than people were expecting, I think, this year. But that doesn't mean, you know, this. I don't know. I think if Richmond and Eagles taught us anything, it's like we can't take any game lightly. I mean, we should feel like that anyway, right? It's the AFL. Every game's any given Sunday, right? So, yeah, I don't know, mate. I don't want to prophesize. I just want to say that I hope we can bring out, you know, this same sort of footy as we played against the Suns. I thought that was really, really good. Luke Parker, I think, is a test. Rampy's a couple of weeks away. Mills will probably come back after the bye. Gus Sheldrick, Caleb Mitchell, Jacob Costanti, even Pistol Pete Laddams had pretty good games in the VFL. It was a 60-all draw against the Suns at 9 a.m. on Sunday before the seniors, which is great because that VFL team, the Suns VFL team, won the premiership last year. So frustrating to get the draw when we kick more behinds, but also positive step forward, I think. I mean, beef. Gus Sheldrick, he 30 touches, 10 clearances, 10 marks, 5 clearances, 3 tackles. And then Caleb Mitchell kicked 2 goals, had 25 touches. JK had 3 goals. Pistol Pete was doing some good things and some bad lad stuff. But
it just goes to show like the growth of the VFL team. I mean, even I remember having this conversation earlier last year, where we're like, where is the depth? We didn't necessarily have that quality of depth that we could bring it. We were comfortable bringing into the game. We were playing Sheeder and things like that as the season went on. And Matty Roberts was having a run through before he got injured. But to see, like, we're quite all the names you're mentioning there, Constanti, Gus Sheldrick, the Beef, and Caleb Mitchell, Laddams, like, these are all players that could walk into a starting 22 and any other part of AFL, I'd suggest.
Certainly, I mean, Aaron Francis is there. Hamling is kind of thereabouts. You know, Buller came back after a couple of weeks of the flu. Look, and Caden Cleary obviously was listed as emergency. He went on to play the game. Indy Kirk's doing some good things. Jaden Magor, Vickery, like they're all playing well. Like as you say, like if we need a strong VFL team, and what I think we didn't have last year was key position ports, players. Yep. Yeah, whether they're forward or backs.
Yeah.
Went out and obviously got Buller and Arnold and, you know, Hamling, Reed's comeback, Francis. Yeah. You know, we're sort of blessed for that now. And Will Green actually played a majority of the game as a key defender, which I was quietly excited about. Because
now, You've been calling for like ruckmen to start doing a bit more defensive defensive work for some time. Every time you've been yelling at us a lot.
I look at the position squeeze and I think we've got to get these players who are good players. We've got to shift them around. But Milliken has come good. I'm happy with the combo there with T-Mac. So, yeah, look, who knows? I mean, the other thing is, and we probably should have led with this chronologically, the VFL team smashed Casey, didn't they? Our VFLW team.
Oh, so the VFLW, yeah. Look, the VFLW team that we're running out there is stacked with talent, with AFL talent. So the way it's a bit complex, the way it runs. If anyone's interested, Gemma on the AFLW website has broken it down really, really well about how the teams are structured and how many AFL players can play within them. Just because the and how many games we're actually getting into these girls. So because the Sydney Swans don't necessarily have a VFL equivalent, they're allowed to play a lot more of their players and can get to run them through. So you're seeing girls like Chloe Malloy, who's arguably the best in the business at any one given day, just running rampant and just getting it done. But what's particularly good is that we're actually seeing the girls apply some different crafts. So what we're noticing is that when we are getting ahead and they're doing all the traditional football things, you know, getting marks in their forward, getting the forwards to take set shots from good angles, you know, straight down the middle, then it seems like we're going in a different direction where they're actually kicking the ball a bit deeper, getting a bit more contested ball, possession use. So it seems like they're trialing the girls out for more contested possession in the forward line to get more of that scrappy goal. So it's all really interesting. You can see how Scott Gowan's super coach is kind of laying out the foundations for this next season and how that's going to run. And it's all
kind of like, that's what it is, right? It's kind of like an extended preseason before the AFLW season, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you get to see some of these girls just like running circles around what is, you know, four layers underneath them in competition.
Yeah.
But you also are being able to see how they are tactically trying to apply their new skills and how much the girls have progressed in just their running ability, still being able to run at that level of AFL level all the way to the end. Of course, reminding everyone that this will be only our third season into the comp. So having these girls with that AFL fitness is still something that needs to be worked on. And I tell you what, they look fantastic now. So we will raise it again for next week, but at the GBD West game, there's actually going to be three games back to back to back. And the VFLW is going to be one of them. So we'll make a big noise about that as it gets through. And if you want to hear more about how AFLW is going for the Swannies, make sure you follow Polly, our own Bevy brethren. She's always on top of absolutely everything related to Swannies generally, and in particular AFLW.
Yep, definitely, mate. Before we go, we had a nice chat with a couple of Suns fans at a pub in Paddington after the game. Hayden and Leighton. We were asked by them not to reference their relationship to a prominent AFL Gold Coast Suns player. We had a good chat about the footy. Obviously, they are from Sydney themselves, but they find themselves supporting the Suns, and they were there with a group of boys, and they were up and about, weren't they? Even though obviously they got the L, but that was nice having a chat with them, talking about the future of the Suns, and it's certainly, I think they know as fans, it's looking pretty bright, obviously with Hardwick coming in and all the talent they have. So I think it's probably not going to be too long before the Suns, I mean, they're going to be a threat all year this year, and I think they're going to be a serious contender in the next couple of years. But it was good to talk to those boys, wasn't it? They were lively. We all had a couple of sherbets.
Yeah, they were having a good time. They were already excited. I mean, as you mentioned, the game didn't go their way necessarily, but that wasn't going to stop them from having a cracker. So it was a good one. But I don't disagree with their energy. I think where the Suns are at is good. I think this week is actually a really disappointing week for them. They're going to look at themselves and be like, all right, that's not the kind of quality we want to play. Yeah. We don't want to be beating that consistently across the ground. And they won't be. Hardwick's going to like drive it into them, and they're going to pick up from here. So
that's right.
So they are a scary sight. They've got talent to boot. Like, just looking at McAndrew, my goodness, this kid. Like, McAndrew Logan duel throughout the game was so interesting, because we know we're going to see that happen a lot for their careers. And yeah, they are superb players. We're watching some pretty fantastic talent coming through. A lot of teams recently, and yeah, the future looks super bright for AFL, man. The competition looks superb.
And they mentioned the fan podcast for the Gold Coast Suns. Was it Turnover the Tape or something like
yes.
that?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So if they're listening, that podcast, we'd love to get on and have a chat with you guys. If anyone from that group of boys are listening, let the podcast, the Gold Coast Suns fan podcast, know, and we'll have a chat and yeah, it'd be awesome to. You know,
share notes about talented young kids. Love to do it with the Swans fans, so particularly in these recent times. Mate, one last thing. It's Anzac Day on Thursday, Anzac long-ish weekend, of course, with the Friday in the middle annoying everyone.
You got to take it, mate. You just got to take
it. I'm taking the day off. Don't worry about that. there's always this commentary about the Anzac jersey for the Swans. The Swans don't have one.
Mm.
How do you look at this? I mean, I'll tell you straight off from my position, I don't necessarily think we need one, but I've seen some awesome stuff like Zane Red and White's done a couple of logos along the way, a couple of versions along the way. Couple of years that look awesome. I'm like, yeah, I can see some benefit in that. But I also don't necessarily feel that it's one something we need to build out of. I mean, what's your perception on that?
I mean, look, I think you know me. If there's a jersey to be bought and there's merch to be collected, I'm going to get it. I don't know if we need it. I mean, I don't know why the other clubs do it. Isn't it just Collingwood and Essendon that actually play on Anzac Day? Do any other teams play on the actual
day? No, I feel it's just those two. But I think even GWS have their own version of it, which is just basically the G with camo on it. It's not that exciting. Guys.
I mean, they're loose at the best of times, but
their socials is for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, their socials is off the charts, mate. It's hilarious. Yeah, look, I don't know, mate. I mean, we get the Pride game with the Saints, so we've got that jersey, Guernsey. But look, if the Swans want to get behind Zane Red and White's design, I saw it as well. I think it looks cool. Why not?
Yeah,
give it a go. But I'm sure the AFL have some little rule saying that only a certain amount of clubs can design.
There'll be
some sort of subset clause. Mm. Be subject to, as the case may be, sort of wording.
But, so otherwise, reading the contract in front of us right now.
Something like that, mate. But look, I don't know. Yep. If it's the Anzac Day round, then
by all means, yeah.
Why not every club just have one?
Yeah, I'm with that. And yeah, if we're going to do it, just get behind Zane Red and White's one. It is really cool. It's got all the poppies on across the V. It looks really good. Well, that does bring us to the end of the episode. So thank you for listening in to the end. If you have listened through, we must have done something good, right? You can only presume so. So make sure wherever you are, just give us a like on any of the socials of your choice and follow us if you feel inclined.
Otherwise, make sure to keep an eye out for more content released through the week, including our weekly teams announcement, as well as a bunch of stuff on game day itself.
Until next time, we're looking forward to seeing you. We won't see you at the MCG, but I think Super Swans Sam will be at the game. But otherwise, we'll see you at the pub, roaring for our Sydney Swans. Until then, up the Bloods and can you Swannies?